I've titled it, The Other 12. Many of us know about the 12 disciples / apostles that Jesus chose. But in the Old Testament, there were a group of 12 men who had writings that were all combined together on one scroll. Isaiah would have his own scroll. Jeremiah would have his scroll with Jeremiah and Lamentations on it. But because of the smallness of the books, these 12 books that are at the back of your Old Testament would be put on one scroll and they would be read that way. And so today we're going to take the first one that's in our English Bible, and we're just going to go in the order in which we have them in our Bible. It's not the order that is in the Hebrew Bible, but it's the order that's in our Bible, and so we're going to take it in that order. It's not the order that's important, it's the message in the books that are important. And some of you have thought, I wonder what those little books are about. I wonder what their story is. Well, over the next several weeks, we will take a parenthesis during Easter. Probably the Sunday before Easter and then Easter Sunday, I will not preach from these 12. But we will get up to that point, and then we will come back in after that point, and we will finish with the book of Malachi later on. But there will be 12 messages in this series, and I hope that as we introduce each one of these prophets to you, that you will become to be very appreciative of what their message has been. Today, we're going to look at the first of these men, Hosea. Hosea is a unique man. He began his ministry as a young man. He began a long ministry, as a matter of fact, of all the prophets that are in the scriptures. He could be the one that prophesied the earliest. He prophesied from somewhere around 755 BC all the way to 710 BC. One of the things that he was saddened to see was the prophecies that he preached. He saw them come to pass when the Assyrian horde came in 722 and basically wiped out the north. When we read through this book, and we're not going to read the whole thing today, we're just going to pick and choose some passages from the first three chapters. But when you read through this book, you will come across the name Ephraim. When you see that name, that is simply another name for the 10 tribes that are in the north. Now you remember, after Solomon was king, the kingdom of Israel, which had been united, it united under Saul to a certain degree. It was truly solidified under David. And Solomon reigned in peace because of all of the work that his father David had done. But when Solomon dies, this kingdom fractures. It goes into two pieces. You have two tribes. You've got Judah and Benjamin in the south, and you've got the other tribes that are up north. And so we come to a prophet to the north. He spends a lot of time at a place called Mount Tabor, which is a mountain, and it's where God would meet with them. The north is a pagan place now. When we get to Amos, we'll see how that they were headed this way, but Amos, in his description of Israel, is not quite as brutal as Hosea is. But Hosea, because of the longness of his prophetic ministry, he saw some terrible things. But that's not the gist of this book. There are often people that say things like this. They'll say, man, God is just a hard God. I mean, if you break his law, you're going to get hammered. But when you read Hosea, what you find is you don't find the messages a lot about breaking the law of God as much as it is about Israel breaking the heart of God. And so this morning, I want to just basically tell you the story about Hosea. It's a story that you and I have probably seen in people's families, perhaps even in our own families, acted out in our lifetimes. And so if I were going to, I guess, tell the story, I would just start off by simply saying something like this. It's a different kind of love story. And all of us like love stories. I mean, we just got finished with Valentine's Day. Last night we went to a Sunday school social and they had a dessert competition. And one of the things that they had the girls do or the ladies do, they had them stand up and had their picture taken. And then it was like all the guys had to go stand up and they all had little signs. And I'm standing there like a baby Huey with a sign that says, "Text me." All right? And all of us think about you know, Valentine's Day and how, you know, it's supposed to be special and all of that kind of stuff. And it is special. As a matter of fact, that was the first day that I ever told my wife that I loved her. You say, "Well, why did you do it on Valentine's Day?" So I could remember it. All right? You know, hey, I'm not the brightest bulb in the chandelier, but I'm not the dimmest either. Not only that, I asked her to marry me on Valentine's Day. Why did I do that? So I could remember it. The last thing I needed was her to say, "Do you remember what day it was that you asked me to marry you?" Well, now I can say, "You betcha. It was February the 14th. And she's like, "How do you remember that?" Because I'm smart, baby. All right? And so we all think about those love stories. And you remember, you did stupid stuff. You really, how many of you, you would die right now? Guys, you would die right now if your wife took one of those old letters and put it out for publication. I got my hand up. All right? I mean, I've got too much pride to write something goofy like that now. But when you're in love, I mean, hey, it's just everything's doable, all right? Well, this is a different kind of love story. So let me tell you the story this morning. And the story completely comes from chapters 1, 2, and 3. Now, chapters 4 through 14 of Hosea, they're basically sermons or messages. But the story of Hosea begins in chapter 1, in chapter 2, and chapter 3. And it's got some applications for you and I that you'll see when we get to the end of the message. The first thing that I want you to see is the beginning of the story. The beginning of the story. Well, if you look with me at our passage in chapter 1, look at verse number 2, the first part of it. And I'm going to stop halfway through a sentence. And I'm going to take a little liberty with the text because I want to be able to share the story the way that I think that it unfolded. The beginning of the word of the Lord by Hosea. "And the Lord said unto Hosea, Go and take thee a wife." I want you to stop right there. The story begins with a young prophet in the north country. No doubt, he's probably somewhere in his early 20s. Perhaps he has maybe attended a school of the prophets that had been begun many, many years before by the great prophet Samuel. And here he is, he's in the north, the country has been divided, but he also makes references in certain passages. I think it's either chapter 1 verse 7 or chapter 2 verse 7, chapter 1. And it talks about Judah, which is down south. But he's in the north. And he's preaching from place to place. And all of a sudden, as he's walking one day, the atmosphere begins to change. This is not unusual for him because he's a prophet of Jehovah. And God speaks to him. And so he understands that God is about to talk to him. And so as he begins to get ready, because when God speaks, I mean, everybody listens. And so he's there and he's walking, and all of a sudden, just the whole circumstance begins to get a little seriousness to it. And he's thinking, God's about to give me my message for my next crusade. And God looks at him and he says, Jose? And as he begins to maybe see a movement, not a God in a person, but maybe is maybe like the burning bush type situation that Moses had. Maybe some type of visual, maybe God was allowing him to see the bushes begin to move, or maybe a cloud. But there's a voice that comes to him and he says, I want you to get married. Well, immediately he's thinking, great. I already know who I want. I mean, there's this preacher's family. They come to a lot of my crusades, and he's got this girl that's good looking. I mean, she helps work the CD table. Okay? I mean, they come in, I mean, they will walk 25 or 30 miles if they know I'm preaching. They'll walk, and she's there, and I'm telling you, I just like the way she looks. I haven't been there, but I've been told that she's got a Moses poster in her bedroom. I got the one, Lord, and the Lord says, no, 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 no. She's going to make somebody a good preacher's wife, but not you. Lord, now that's the one that I need. No, Jose, I got another job for you to do. And I'm going to tell you something. God sometimes has people do strange things. He says, I don't want you to marry that girl. He says, I want you to marry a pagan girl. Somebody goes, would God really have a prophet do that? Oh, yeah. In these times? Now, can I tell you something today? I don't believe that it would be God's will for a Christian to marry an unsaved person today, because it would be a violation of 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14. But in this time, Hosea is going to be a walking visual. He's going to be a walking picture of how that God is being treated by Israel. And so he says, you're going to marry a pagan girl. If you look with me back at verse number 2, he says, you take unto thee a wife of whoredoms and children of whoredoms. For the land, Israel, hath committed great whoredom. You get the idea, that's a pretty bad thing. I mean, that word's been used 3 times in one verse. Departing from the Lord. So in verse number 3, he's like, Lord, are you sure? I mean, a wife is a good thing according to Solomon. Yep, you do what I tell you to do, Hosea. So he went and he took Gomer. Now I know you can't judge people by their names a lot of times. If that were so, Foskey would be a pretty tough thing to be judged by. Gomer? I guarantee you, if I said, tell me a Gomer, every one of you that's my age or older. Now, these kids not going to know about it, all right? But these folks that are my age or older, you're thinking one thing, Gomer Powell, USMC. It's exactly what you're thinking. And if you kids don't know who Gomer Powell is, just think Shazam and YouTube it, all right? And so he says, you go and you take this girl named Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim. You go, what in the world does a Diblaim mean? That's as bad as Gomer. Well, it carries the idea of a raisin cake. Evidently, her mother would make raisin cakes, and it would be used in the sacrifice to these pagan altars of Baal. You see, every hill and every tree and every grove, as you would go up and down those mountains and those hillsides in the north country, they all had little shrines that they had built to Baal. Oh, you had Baal, who was the god of the weather, and you had other gods that were under the umbrella of Baal called Baalim. And you had these people that supposedly were people of God, but they had all these other gods. And here Gomer's mother is one of these committed people. I mean, when it's time for a service to Baal, she's bringing food to put at the altar. And so, that's how it begins. Well, it's not long before the love story begins to fall apart. You say, do you think Jose knew that it would? Yeah, he probably did. But I think that he was probably hoping against hope that it wouldn't. There are times when you know something is just not going to work out, but you hope that it does. Perhaps he's thinking, maybe the influence that I've had as a prophet, maybe it's kind of rubbed off on this heathen girl. I mean, after all, I mean, we've been kind of happy. I mean, she's attractive. You know, I mean, we've been together now for probably a year or two, and you know, and everything seems to be going pretty good. And it seemed to be really going good when he comes in one day and she says, I'm pregnant. Well, that's an exciting time in the life of a young couple. I mean, you know, you just kind of come in and all of a sudden your wife's kind of got this little look on her face. And she goes, we're going to have a kid. We got a baby coming. And it's exciting. And when you have more, it's more exciting. And when you have a lot more, it gets less exciting. Because you're thinking, how am I going to pay for these kids? I heard about three guys that were in a waiting room waiting for their wives to give birth. And this one guy was sitting there and a nurse came out and said, congratulations, you've got twins. He said, man, that is great. He said, I'm a scout for the Minnesota Twins. And he was just as excited as he could be. Well, a few minutes later, another nurse comes out and looks at the second guy and says, you've got triplets. He goes, man, that is great. I work for 3M. And the third guy just passed out, cold as a cucumber. And they finally got him revived, and they said, man, what's wrong? He said, I just don't know if I can handle this. Said, this guy's got twins. He worked for the Minnesota Twins. This guy's got triplets. He worked for 3M. I worked for 7-Up. I mean, it's exciting when you have a baby. And all he's thinking is, maybe what I can do is maybe I can name him Ben Jose, the son of Jose. And then God whispers to him and he says, no, 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 no. You can't name him Ben Jose, not son of Jose. You name that boy Jezreel. The word Jezreel means God has scattered. And that's exactly what God's going to do to the nation of Israel. They're going to be scattered. When those Assyrians come in just a few short years, and the nation of Israel are going to be just wiped out for centuries. Most of you have heard the term, the lost tribes of Israel. This is where it comes from. It comes from when the Assyrians wiped them out. So he says, you name that boy Jezreel. Well, let me tell you something. It's not too long in the future now when he begins to notice that Gomer's leaving Jezreel at home with him a lot more than, and maybe she ought to. Instead of going to the marketplace and coming back and taking care of the home, she begins to come in at 7, 8 o'clock at night. Oh, it's been dark for a while. I mean, the marketplace has been closed. Where you been? Well, I've just been out with some friends. And before long, it's not 7 or 8 o'clock, it's 8 or 9 o'clock, and then 10 or 11 o'clock. Well, what do you do? I'm just hanging out with friends. Before long, she comes in after midnight. And then it gets to the point to where she didn't come home till the next morning. And in his heart, he's going, I know what's happening. Well, then she comes home a little bit and stays there for a few days. And then she says, we're going to have another child. And Hosea's thinking, it's probably not mine. The first one, I don't think any doubt, is his. But when she has this second, and then later on there'll be a third, I don't think there's any doubt that they're not his. And so here he has a young wife, and she's begun to commit adultery. And she becomes pregnant. If you look with me at verse 6, she conceived again and bear a daughter. So the first one is a son, the second one is a daughter, and God says to him, you call her name Lo-Ruhamah. And what that means is no more mercy. There's no love. She doesn't have a father's love. Why? Because Hosea is not her father. And so Hosea's heartbroken. He's thinking, my wife's an adulteress. And God whispers to him, I told you it was going to be this way. But I was hoping that it wouldn't be this way. But I told you it would be this way. Because you see, Hosea, there's a picture that these people in this country need to see. Well, she stays home for a little while she's feeding the baby. But if you look at verse number 8, after she had weaned the little girl, Ruhamah, she conceives again. And there's no doubt that it's not Hosea's. And this time it's a little boy. And God said, you call his name Lo-Ami, which means you are not my people. In other words, you're no kin of mine. No kin. So you got two illegitimate children by a woman that is committing adultery over and over and over. It seems as though that she's just, her whole life is, how can I find another man to be intimate with? She leaves her husband at home. She's got a little boy that's probably 3 or 4. She's got a little girl now that's probably about 15 months to 2 years. And now she's pregnant and she gives birth to another little boy. And Hosea, he's beside himself. Oh, but she doesn't stop there. Man, this story, it hasn't just fallen apart completely. Oh, it's only halfway there. Gomer, the adulteress, has two illegitimate kids. But what does she do? Now she leaves. She leaves her husband, a good man, a prophet. She leaves her 3 kids. How sorry is that? That she would walk out on her whole family. I mean, I've known of people that have left husbands for various reasons. And I've known of circumstances where women have left children. But that is a rarity. Most of the time, they want the kids to be with them. Oh, but not Gomer. Not her. She's like, I'm still young. I still want to be with my friends. And so Hosea begins to think, I can't keep funding this. I mean, she's left me with these three little kids. He's doing everything he can. He's canceling preaching engagements. I mean, he's living a frugal life just trying to make ends meet. And where's she at? She's who knows where. But you see, she wasn't just a serial adulteress. She goes out on her own, and because she begins to have a problem making ends meet, she begins to prostitute herself. I mean, she'll find a man that'll give her some money. Anything you want, I'm here. She'll find a man that'll buy her a meal. Hey, let's go back to your place. Anything that she could get, she was willing to sell herself to get it. And so Hosea, now probably 2, 3, 4 years are passing. He doesn't have a clue where she's at. He's not heard anything through the grapevine, through any of their friends. And one day, somebody comes by and he says, Hosea, I think I saw Gomer in the town square. They've got a slave auction going on. Said, I'm not sure. I mean, she don't look like she used to look. But I'm pretty sure that that's your wife down there. So he gets his prophet coat on, and downtown he heads. And he gets there and he looks, and sure enough, coming right up on the dock, they've got this woman. He looks at her, and there's no doubt in his mind, he knows that it's Hosea. I mean, it's Gomer. Hosea sees her, and he goes, that's her. She stands up there, and the next thing you know, one of the auctioneers strips her off, and she's standing there with no clothes and begins the auction. And some guy says, I'll give you 2 shekels. And Hosea says, 3. Somebody else says, I'll give you 4. And Hosea says, 6. Somebody else says, 8. I'll give you 10. And the bidding gets all the way up, and finally says, Hosea says, I'll give you 15 shekels and a homer and a half of barley, which is roughly 16 and a half bushels. And the auctioneer says, sold, and he hits the podium with his hammer. They push her off the docket, and he walks down, he takes his coat off, and he puts it around her. And that brings us to the third point tonight, or today. He takes her home that night. And what does he say? Look with me at verse number 2 of chapter 3. So I brought her to me. He bought her. And then he brought her to his house. And he said in verse number 3, you're going to abide with me many days. You're not going to be a servant. I don't need a servant. I need a wife. My kids don't need a maid. They need a mother. And thou shalt not play the harlot. And thou shalt not be for another man. And so will I also be for thee. In other words, we're going to have a monogamous relationship here. Well, we see the third thing is that the love never stops. The love never stops. Now, some of you are probably sitting there and you're probably thinking, bless God, I wouldn't have her back. She's going to act a fool like that? I mean, she's going to commit adultery with any guy that she can find and get pregnant by any guy that shows her any attention? And then she's going to go off and begin to sell herself as a common harlot? You're saying, I would never take her back. But you see, what you and I don't understand is this. We're not Hosea. We are Gomer. We're Gomer. We've been so unfaithful to God in our lives. God has been so good to us. I mean, He saved us. Oh, but whenever we begin to think about that forever triangle, as Ray Steadman talks about, oh, there's the love of God. Oh, but then there's the faithless hearts that we have. But then there's the lure of the world. And the world is always wooing us. And just like Gomer had those lovers, the world woos you and I. And how often have we played the harlot when the world calls us? And God says, you're mine. And we go, but we're going to hang out with somebody else tonight. And God says, I purchased you. I bought you. Yeah, but I've got some buddies I'm hanging out with tonight. We're Gomer. But yet God, He looks down and He's not looking to just hammer us like a 16-penny nail. He looks at us and He says, I'll bring you back. That's the story of Hosea. It's a different kind of love story. Don't ever think, oh, I would never do anything like that. You have done stuff like that. And I've done stuff like that. When we knew that God loved us so much and wanted us to do something, and yet what did we do? We loved the world. It's no wonder that the Apostle John said, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And you and I are Gomer. One of the things that I like to read about Gomer is the latter part of verse or chapter 3. In verse number 4, it says, for the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king. And that was true. To this day, Israel does not have a king, not like David. And without a prince, there's not even somebody that's in the wings waiting to become king. Not that they know of. They don't really, or they're going to seek the Lord one day. They're going to return, and they're going to seek the Lord, and they're going to seek David as their king. Now, they're not going to have the ancient David. They're going to have one named Jesus that sits on David's throne. And he shall fear the Lord and his goodness. And then I want you to notice the last four words of chapter 3, in the latter days. In the latter days. There's a time in the future when Israel is going to quit playing the harlot. She's going to come back and she's going to abide in obedience and love to God. Right now, we're in the church age. And I believe that the application is for you and I today to say, God loves me. I will love Him. And can I tell you something? If we love the Lord, a lot of the peripheral stuff will take care of itself. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not going to be some temptation that comes your way, and there's not going to be some times when you may fall. But overall, your lifestyle ought to be one that says, look what God's done for me. I want to try to live for Him. When I look at my own life, I pray, Lord, let me be Gomer at the end, not Gomer in the middle and at the beginning. Let me be a faithful prophet like Hosea was. There's no doubt there were a lot of restless nights that Hosea had. Oh, I know that I've had people tell me over the years, it was a restless night last night. I was waiting for my son or my daughter to come home, and they finally got home at 3:00. And you're so sleepy, but you're scared to go to bed because you're scared that phone call is going to come. And it's going to be the police on the other end, and they're going to say, there's been an accident. And your heart's going to get crushed one more time. And so you just pace the floor. Why? Because your kid's not home. In this situation, the spouse wasn't home. And there's no doubt that there was a lot of anxious times in the life of this prophet of God. Well, when we think about God and His love, I believe that there's a sadness that we can create when we don't live for God and obey God the way that we ought to. Because did not the Apostle Paul say this, grieve not the Spirit of God that's inside of us? Did he not say, quench not the Spirit of God? Church, we're Gomer. Let's be Gomer at the end and not at the beginning. Let's stand together. Heads bowed, eyes closed. I hope this introduction to the book of Hosea is going to be one that you never forget. It's my prayer that we will forsake the ways of Gomer and we'll embrace the one who loves us. You say, preacher, how do I know that God loves me? All you've got to do is look at Calvary. You look at what Jesus did, and there's no doubt that Jesus proved God's love. This morning, if you don't know Christ, I want you to come when the musicians begin to play. If you're here and you need to just pray and maybe confess your sins, come and pray. If you want to join this fellowship.